My name is Butch Maslin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity and privilege of coming here and taking part in your meeting tonight. When I say that, I'm not saying it because it sounds nice or I need you to like me. I'm saying it because I mean it from the very bottom of my heart. I'm a guy who considers it a privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I consider it a privilege to come here and be with you folks. So I want to thank you and thank John for the invitation and my friend Harold for picking me up at the airport. And I'm really glad to be here after driving with Harold. We could just go out to his car now and take those side mirrors off because he doesn't believe in using them. They're serving no purpose whatsoever. He did share with me he hadn't been in an accident in a long time, and that reassured me. It is good here to take part in you can count, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know we got some new folks here, and I am real pleased that you're here, and if you are here and have not done your steps yet, our steps are designed to deflate the ego. That is the problem of the alcoholic. Selfishness and self-centered, the ego. And our steps are designed to deflate that ego enough to allow a power to come into our life. So if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous and haven't done your steps, or if you're not new to Alcoholics Anonymous and haven't done your steps, you can count on your friends and fellow members to deflate your ego for you. They will say, my wife deflates. She said to me today, she said, what is it you're going? I said, I'm going to a thing. It's just a thing they're going to do, and it's a pre-conference meeting. They said, so they have you come here before they get to real speakers. I can tell you, I got a call one time. I got a call from a place called Ottawa in Canada. It's our nation's capital. It's about 6 hours from our home. And a guy called me up. He says, are you Butch Maslin? I said, yes, I am. He said, well, we were wondering, he said, I'm so-and-so. And he said, we have a conference in Ottawa. We were wondering if you'd be able to come on a certain date. And I said to him, I looked and the date was free. I said, but let me ask you. I said, you just have the one conference in Ottawa? He said, yes, we do. I said, is it the Crown Plaza Hotel? He said, yes, it is. I said, well, I think it's only fair I let you know. I talked at your conference not that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It might be soon for me to come there. He said to me, he said, are you sure you talked there? I thought, what do you think, I'm lying to you for God's sake? I said, I just told you where it was. He says, well, I've been on that committee for a long time. He said, I don't remember you. I said, I have that effect on people. I said, listen, why don't you check with your committee and let them know if you want me to come, I'm happy to come. But if they feel it's too soon, I understand you want to get someone else. He said, that's what I'll do, Butch. He said, I'll call you in a few days. He called me back a few days. He said, Butch, he says, I've talked to everybody on the committee. Nobody remembers you. And that's how it should be. That's how it should be. So it's good to be here. I've said to John today, I think that date's open. I think I'm going to come to that conference. I know all the people that are talking there, and you're in for a great time. I hope you guys register for this conference. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, haven't been to a conference, our program is the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that is one of the elements in the cement that keep us together. Another one is the fellowship. And there is incredible fellowship at these conventions. I've watched many, many people come to these conventions and leave a different person. I've watched people come to these conventions and leave a changed person. So I sure hope you guys and gals have the opportunity to register and go to that thing, your 41st convention. I'm attracted to longevity. I find longevity attractive. Long-time groups, long-time members. I love the old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a deep, deep love for the old-timers. Deep love. Men and women who've been coming for 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years. Who've made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics Anonymous. So it'd be here for a guy like me and those new folks. I love them from the bottom of my heart. From the bottom of my heart. My sponsor was an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 17th, 1958. And he was an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous till the day he died on June the 10th, 2004. And when I say active, I mean active. He did stuff. He went places. And one of the great joys of IAA life, and there's been many, is he took me with him. He took me all over the country with him, that old man, and I loved traveling with him and going those places. And after I was sober for a little while, we get asked to come up the front of one of these rooms and take part in a meeting. He knew how nervous I'd get before coming up here. He'd sit beside me in that meeting before my name was called, and he'd rub my back. Oh. They cry at Al-Anon when I do that. And he'd say, I know it doesn't feel like a kid, but I'm with you every step of the way. And I'd get up the front of this room and look out, and there he'd be sound asleep in his chair. We'd drive home, he'd say, that was a nice talk, Butch. Say, thanks, Bob. Anyway, John told me I can talk as long as I want tonight. My home group's a three legacy group, Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Monday and Thursday nights. If you're ever in the Toronto area, we'd love to see you there. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a group guy. I'm a group guy. I believe in the home group. I believe that the home group is the heartbeat of AA. That's not something from a pamphlet. It's what I believe in all my heart. I believe we're only as strong as a home group. We're only as effective. You know, in correspondence of Bill Wilson had with Carl Jung many, many years after Alcoholics Anonymous had been started, he wrote to Carl Jung and he asked him about Roland Hazard. Roland Hazard had gone and seen Carl Jung. Roland Hazard was the man who went to the judge and got Ebbie Thatcher, who was the man that went and saw Bill Wilson and was the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he asked Carl Jung, how did he know what to do? I'd tell him about that meeting with Roland Hazard. And he said that he knew that he needed to have a psychic change in order to recover. That was the only hope of him, to have that psychic change. But then he needed to be in an environment where that spiritual awakening can be supported. And that's what happens in home groups. That once we have that spiritual experience, we have a home group and be with like-minded people that support that. It's home group. Because you see, you and I as an individual, we can only sponsor so many men. You can only sponsor so many women. We can only be so effective as an individual. But as a group, we can be much more effective. And I believe in home groups. So I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I belong to the best group in the world. I don't say that any longer. I find it very arrogant of me. But I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place. Where personal recovery is there, where we study and teach the 12 steps out of the first 164 pages of our big book. Very, very big on that. But also where the other two legacies, where unity is there. Where we operate and function together under the umbrella of our 12 traditions. Our 12 traditions aren't just something that's read at the meeting or stuck up on the wall, but where we study and teach our traditions to our members so that we can operate under that. Where we're as service as a group, where it's not just the same one or two individuals constantly doing everything, but together as a group we carry a message. It's not just go and put on coffee and drink coffee and discuss something and go our own ways, but we operate as a group. Whereas a group, we have committees that we're at that detox every Monday and Thursday night and make sure that those people come to our meeting. Where we have a beginner's meeting where new people can start to understand what alcoholism is and what our basic foundation is about. Where there's structure in our group. We know for months in advance who's going to chair those meetings and who's going to talk at those meetings. So that we know that when those new people come, they're going to hear a message of recovery. They're going to hear a message from people who have done the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong to a group where when you come to our home group, and I want to thank the gals who are at the door to shake our hand when we, no, they're not there now. Come in and shake our hand when we came in here, because I'm a guy that believes that's the single most important thing that we can do as a home group. The single most important thing that we can do as a home group is to be at that door when that new guy or new gal walk through for their first meeting. Because an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean a damn thing to them. But a warm handshake, welcome, come on in and get a cup of coffee and sit here with us, means a great deal. I belong to a group where there's enthusiasm. I like enthusiasm. I think enthusiasm is contagious. Don't you love it? Don't you like enthusiasm? I love coming to these things. Did you hear in here before this meeting started that chatter in the room? Don't you love that buzz, that everybody talking, nobody listening? Alcoholics. The most self-centered people in the world. You ever try to talk to somebody after the meeting? 10 people walk up and say, I don't mean to interrupt. Oh, yes, you do. That enthusiasm. I know there's no such thing as a bad group. But there's some trying hard. They're trying hard. I shall mourn for God's sakes. That enthusiasm's contagious. Those new people need to hear that laughter in the room, to feel that energy in the room. And fellow alcoholics, I believe in all my heart that when a guy or gal walks through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous for their first meeting, if they walk into a room where those things are in place, their chances of recovery become much greater than if they walk into a place where none of that's happening. So I'm excited to be here where there's strong Alcoholics Anonymous here in your wonderful city. And I thank you for that invitation to be here. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I have no idea. Let me just tell you, it wasn't the Cleaver residence in my home. There was lots of parties in my home, lots of drinking in my home always. And I grew up around that as a little boy. I remember being 4 years old, and my mom's neighbor came to our house. He made the effort, John, to come to my ma's house, knocked on the door. He didn't know my ma too good. He came in, and I was sitting there in the living room, and he said to my mom, he pointed at me, he says, "That guy right there," he said, "you're raising a juvenile delinquent." I was 4 years old, for God's sakes. That guy turned out to be a prophet. Prophet. My mom had me downtown. I was still like 4 years old and stuff. She had me down at the Five and Dime store. She's doing a little shopping in there, and she's going around the aisles getting her stuff, and she looks, she can't find me. She starts looking around the store to see me. She can't find me anywhere. She starts to get worried. She's up and down all the aisles, can't find me. She goes out, looks out on the street, can't see me. My dad worked at a little bank downtown. She ran to the bank, said, "Butch is lost." My dad comes over the counter. They're up and down the street. They can't find me anywhere. Now they're getting scared. Something's happened. They went to the police station. They went into the police station, said it was a small community. They said, "We've lost our little boy." And the guy at the desk said, "Is he a blonde-haired boy with the red shirt?" Oh, relief, huh? They said, "Yeah, that's him." He said, "Well, we had him. We had him. But we've lost him." And he took the keys to the cells with him. There was a time 20 years later, I wished I had those keys left. I'm 11 years old, 12 years old, I don't know, I'm in a classroom at class, and the teacher announced there's going to be a walkathon. I don't know if you have them here, where you get pledges and you walk all the miles and the poor people get the money. Well, I was sitting at the back of the room where the smart kids sit. And I made a conscious decision by the time she asked us to come up and get the sheet to get the pledges on. I made a conscious decision from the time I got to the back of the room to the front of the room, I was taking two sheets. One for the poor people, one for me. I figure if I'm walking, I'm getting some of the cash. And that's how I was to go through the next 20 years, lying, cheating, and stealing. Some sort of entitlement. I didn't need to do things that other people need to do. I should just have stuff. And that's how I was to go through life. That's how I was to go through life before I came to you people. On September the 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. In its purest form. Now that should tell you something right there. My mother's house. Somewhere every 33-year-old self-respecting alcoholic should be is with his mummy. Two men came to my mother's house that night practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. They made the effort to leave their homes. They came to my mother's house and they talked to me about their drinking. They did not talk to me about my drinking. They did not tell me I shouldn't drink, I shouldn't take drugs, I should go to treatment. They didn't tell me nothing. Those two men came to my mother's house that night, September the 21st, 1989, told me what had happened in their lives since they came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with them? I was a helpless, hopeless, chronic alcoholic. I'd been running the streets drinking whiskey and sticking needles in my arm since I was 13 years old. And those two men came to my mother's house that night, took me to my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been with you ever since that night. I don't know how to explain that to you, what to tell you about that, but I want to tell you I'm extremely grateful for that experience. Because I know that's not everybody's experience that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous many times, return to drinking, come back to AA. Some people return to drinking and never come back to AA. But that was my experience. The other thing is that I'm grateful for, and there's many, but the other thing is I've loved coming here almost from that first night. Almost from that first meeting. There was something in that room that night. I didn't know what it was then. I know what it was tonight. It was hope. And I have loved coming. I love going to meetings, conferences, assemblies, workshops. I love listening to the story of an alcoholic. And the seedier, the better. So I have no regrets since the day I come to, up to and including tonight, other than one. I do have one regret, and that is that I didn't get to drink with some of you people. I don't know if you've ever thought that or not, but I've walked away from some people I met around here thinking I'd like to let a little drink with that guy. Huh? We're a cast of characters in this outfit, aren't we? You couldn't make some of this stuff up that goes on around here. I'm going to tell you a quick story. I was going to an AA thing a number of years ago up in northern Ontario, way up north on the American-Canadian border. Little roundup they were going to have. And I went there and I got up Saturday morning, went out for breakfast. I was going to talk there that night. I picked up the local paper. I like to read about the community I've been invited to come to. Only seems fitting. And I'm sitting in the restaurant reading this on the front page of this little local paper. This is a true story. Well, I hope my whole story's true. But this part is for sure. And there was an article on the front page of that paper. There was a man, they had arrested him coming across the American-Canadian border drunk on a stolen street sweeper. And my first thought was, I'd like to have a little drink with that guy. Huh? I was 25 years old and my wife had thrown me out of our home, and I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving at that time. It's important that I say that to you, as much as I was capable of loving. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells of apartment buildings in downtown Toronto. I just went from building to building. I had a new address each night. And at nighttime, I was under that stairwell. In the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer. Out on those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I need to get to do the things I need to do. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about AA luggage. Matching green garbage bags? Huh? I didn't have any AA luggage. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. They're going to be cool at any expense. I'm 25 years old. I'm living in stairwells. I got the clothes on my back. And nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Because alcoholics of my type are users and takers. I use and I take from everybody I come in contact with. Now, it doesn't always appear that way, because I'm constantly seeking your approval. I'm the guy in the bar buying the drinks for everybody, passing a bag of powder around, everybody's friend, good old Butch. The only reason I ever did anything for anyone was so you'd like me, not because I cared about you. I couldn't care less if you lived or died. Made no difference to me. I'm a taker. Let me tell you who I take from most. The people who love me. The people who care about me. Because see, they love me so much they can't stop trying. One more time. This time it's going to work. And they keep giving and giving, and I keep taking and taking. Till eventually I break their hearts. Eventually those people got to push me away because they can't stand to watch it any longer. And that's where I am. I'm in the east end of Toronto one night. I'm all jacked up and nowhere to go, as I said. And my wife and I owned a home, what we call the beaches, down near the lakefront. And we had a screened-in porch in that house and a couple wicker couches. I thought, I'm going to slip in there and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out. And I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum. And you'll never change. And if you cared anything about me, you'd get up and get out of here. And please don't ever come back, because I can't stomach to look at you. And I got up and I left there. It was a hot, hot summer day. Not as hot as you get here, but hot. And I'm hungover and I'm dope sick and I'm dirty and I'm heart sick. And I walk down to what they call the boardwalk down on the lakefront. And I'm sitting down there in that condition on a park bench. And over where you guys are sitting, there was another bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting there eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot, the dope dealer, everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench, wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody in this earth wanting anything more to do with me. And guys, here was the thought that I had at that moment, as clear as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment that park bench, or somewhere just like it, was where I was going back to every single time, and I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with a horror story, because I don't think it would serve any purpose. You see, if you're an alcoholic like me, you already know it never gets better. it always gets worse. And I had 8 more years out there. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33, and I joined a group. And I got a sponsor. And I did the things you guys told me to do. Forget this suggested crap, the stuff you told me to do. You know where I was a number of years ago now? Huh? Rome, Italy. Rome, Italy. And I'm standing in the Sistine Chapel, looking at the paintings from Michelangelo from hundreds of years before, my wife standing beside me, and the tears started rolling down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on the park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dredges of society. Many of us here tonight, our own families didn't even want us around any longer. Yet here we sit tonight, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we were to where we sit tonight? How does that happen for you and I? Because it's not supposed to. But you know how it happens, don't you? And it only happens one way and only one way. And that is through the grace of God. Through a loving God that you introduced me to through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. I am incredibly grateful for what you've done for me. Incredibly grateful. As I said earlier, I started to drink at that young age, 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was 4. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol. I don't know. I was maybe 12 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. 2 bottles of Old Sailor. I think that's comparable to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And let me tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank that wine. We got drunk, puked, and passed out. And that was the end of my social drinking. All downhill from there. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous home, I don't know if you have this, John, that Lance, or not, but I hear people in these discussion meetings say things like they came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous is going to teach them how to be a social drinker. You hear that here? They said, came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help them be a social drinker. Let me tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. Weird. You ever watch a social drinker drink? They let the ice melt in their glass. That's sick. That's alcohol abuse right there. You ever drink with a social drinker? It's enough to make you puke. You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. Really? I thought that's when you put it in overdrive, social drinker. My wife, my D's at home right now. She's a social drinker. She's at home right now praying for me. Or you. But D's a social drinker. And a little while ago, we have an open concept in our home. And I looked over. D was in the kitchen. She's got a bottle of wine, John, on the counter with a funnel in it. I thought, what's she doing with that funnel? So I watched her. And then she goes and takes a glass of wine and starts pouring it in the funnel. I said to her, what are you doing over there? She says to me, I put too much in the glass. Oh, Jesus. I said, don't you ever do that again. I'll divorce you, social drinker. I'm a barroom drinker. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholics. Just drank differently than me. You know those people you hear and they get the bottle, go in and lock the door, put on the country western music? I don't identify. I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I love them. I like opening the door to a bar. The smoke could billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. I like neon. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like neon. I like that jacket. I got to tell you, I thank God I never tried. That's why I stay in those casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I tell you, I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love to drink in your country. I love drink. You got many more here than we got at home. I call them juke joints. You know those divey, scuzzy little rat hole bars? Huh? You got some around here. I saw them. Oh, beautiful. I like driving by them. Makes me feel good. But those divey little joints with that neon sign says cocktails. Huh? Oh. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago in Pennsylvania. I decided to drive there. My wife came with me. I'm driving through this little town in the middle of nowhere. I'm going down the main street. I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm back in my car. My wife said to me, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. And guys, there it was. This divey little rat hole joint had a neon sign. Said, stop for one, stay till one. Oh, oh. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. The work of art. Anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking tonight other than to very quickly share with you what drinking does for an alcoholic of my type. For an alcoholic, not to an alcoholic, but for an alcoholic. The things that I'm going to share with you, particularly you guys or gals that are new tonight, I didn't know this when it was happening. Any of this stuff that I share with you, I did not know this at the time. I saw it in inventory. I saw it as you took me back through my life and helped me see my life honestly for the very first time. But as I look back today, I remember being a young boy in school. 10 years old, 11 years old. And I'd be in a classroom like this. There'd be a teacher at the front of the room and she'd ask a question. And she'd start looking around that room to see who she was going to ask to answer that question. And my head goes down like this. Oh, just don't let her ask me. Because I knew if she made eye contact with me, she's asking me to answer the question, and I don't want to answer the question. It doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question, I don't want to answer the question. When I went to school, you used to have to do book report. Get up in front of the whole classroom full of kids? No good. No good. I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night. I'm sick. I can't go to school today. Please don't make me go today. I'm too sick to go. Because I want to tell you something. I'd be terrified. Absolutely terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I ever made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. I don't know about any of you guys, but I every now and then would get goofy. I'd go on about a 5-day run. I'd come home on a Sunday after being gone for 5 days. My wife would be there. When I got there, I'd walk in. I'd say, sweetheart, that's it. No more. I mean, no more. I know I said this last week, but I swear my ma's life, I'm never having another drink of whiskey as long as I live. I swear to you, sweetheart. That's Sunday. I wake up Monday. I think to myself, I shouldn't have said that. I should not have said that. I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad, bad deal. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about that reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception, and that dance is going to start, and I don't have anything in me, and my hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place, and it is horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a couple drinks into me, or I got to get out of there, because I can't stand the way I feel. Every decision I make in my life is based on that fear. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything, and I don't even know it. We talk a lot these topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight. Huh? I call it hate. Hate. I know you're not that sick in Atlanta, but in Toronto we are. Hate. I'm the type of alcoholic driving my car. I'm in my car now, and I'm at a red light. I'm on the nod. Huh? That light would turn green, and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, open the door, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar, and crack his skull open. I know some of you spiritual giants here never thought thoughts like that. But I do. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking rage. I'm talking white rage. I'm talking the kind of anger that you don't have 10 minutes before and you don't have 10 minutes after. But I'm talking about a rage that comes out and I can't control it. And I say things or do things to people I never wanted to say or do. And let me tell you who takes the brunt of my rage. It happens behind closed doors. It's the people who love me and care about me. Because see, I'm constantly seeking your approval. So you don't display that there. You keep it for the people whose approval you think you already have. Lonely. I'm standing at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday night, all jacked up, and the train pulled up and the doors opened, and a young couple my age got off that train holding hands. And they walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I looked at that couple and I felt sad. I thought, why can't I be like those people? Why is all the trouble got to keep happening? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night. You get that nice summer night and it's just getting dark and a warm breeze. And I'd walk down a street and I'd see those nice homes. And I'd see the television on inside and the family in there. And I'd feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why is all the trouble got to keep happening time and time again? Guys, from as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. If I was at this bar, I'd say, drink up, let's go to that bar. If we're at this party, drink up, let's go over to the other party. If I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. And I don't know about you guys, but I'll tell you something. I get one of those double vodkas, whatever I was doing that day. It was like this. I don't know if you remember that or not. Here, I'll give you one more. Here. I did that in a meeting one night. Two guys got up and left. You should see when I do that at detox. They're on the ceiling. It's beautiful. But let me tell you something. I have three or four of those vodkas, and I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I am moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies, and I'm sitting with my buddies, and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on. And at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect. Those sweaty hands go away. That knot in my gut is gone. The rage subsides and the loneliness vanishes, and I walk in there like I own the joint. Same wedding, same hall, same food, same people, same music, same everything, but you put four vodkas in me and my perception of reality changes. And I get an immediate, not in 28 days, an immediate sense of ease and comfort. And that is why I drink whiskey, because I like the effect it produces. But I am an alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people that drink it, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking, I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka, and I'd smash up my car. I go out after work with the boys for a few beers, I go on a 5-day bender, I get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread, I run into Harold, I come home 18 months later, my wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on, I don't want to stop, I got no money, so I'm stealing yours, and now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was crashed cars, broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jails. We looked at drinking. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, Butch, if you just quit drinking whiskey and sticking those needles in your arms, you'd be all right. And there was times I wasn't drinking whiskey, and guess what? I wasn't all right. As a matter of fact, I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see, and they were well-meaning, was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking. It'll be okay. But those well-meaning people don't understand how an alcoholic feels when I'm not drinking. How could they know? I didn't know. I'd love to stand up here tonight and tell you I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money. Work was thinking of promoting me, and my wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my back was against the wall. My boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky. He said, you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everyone's going to be okay. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office. was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left? Huh? Oh, he's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another hotel room in another town drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the reason, that morning I woke up, I knew the jig was up. Now, Robert, you know and you know. And I used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars. I don't know what that's about. I will lie when the truth would serve me better. Huh? I'm a pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic that goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, good game. Butch, good game. So I've used all the lies. I know I got to come up with something good. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it. I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody tonight here who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. We're just glad to see you. And maybe, just maybe by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in your life. And you can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many men and women here have been able to do. Just keep coming, because we're glad to have you. And as I said in the beginning, I've been a blessed man since the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Blessed man. Deep love in my heart for those old timers. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something. I have some people on pedestals. Giants in our program. Some of them right here in the room tonight. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. The greatest gift my sponsor, I love that man, the greatest thing Bob Dobbs never did for me, it wasn't some profound thing he pulled out of the book, some divine spiritual thing he laid on me. The greatest gift that old man ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see him get lustful. He allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life, none more than my own sponsor. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. Idiot. I didn't like my sponsor. I loved my sponsor, and I love my sponsor today. You see, you were the very first people who helped me understand what my problem was. Because I don't know about you, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you knew what your problem was or not, but I'm going to tell you, I didn't have a clue. Now, I had been told what my problem was. A lot of people told me. My wife told me what my problem was. My parents had told me what my problem was. Judges told me what my problem was. Psychiatrists, I'd heard all my life. Just quit drinking. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. It's your solution. How I feel sober is my problem. Sober, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. Sober, I can't seem to control my emotional natures. Sober, I can't seem to form true relationships with others. Sober, I'm prone to misery and depression. Sober, I can't seem to make a living. Sober, I'm full of fear and unhappy. That's how I am sober. And an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating alcoholism, and sitting in AA meetings does not treat alcoholism. That's the great myth that kills many alcoholics. The meetings are where the solution is. The meetings are where the fellowship is. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous treat alcoholism. And an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating that alcoholism, sober, will get so restless, irritable, and discontent that I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have lost the power in choice. That's what makes me alcoholic. That is the difference between me and the hard drinker, the guy that goes out and gets drunk every weekend and goes to work Monday, as described in our book. But an alcoholic of my type has lost the power. I don't have a choice whether I drink or not. Not drinking and not treating alcoholism, sober I will get so restless, irritable, and discontent, have to do one of two things. Either drink again or blow my brains out. Most of us drink again. But we all know somebody who's paid the supreme price, don't we? Didn't have a clue. You told me that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. I didn't do an inventory and go, my, Butch, you haven't been a very nice boy. I did not need to do an inventory to find out I was a lion, cheat, and thief. I had to do an inventory to find out some facts about myself. Because, you see, I had never been dealing with facts. I deal with delusion. And I had to do that inventory to see how self manifests in my life in various ways. Selfishness and self-centeredness, the root of my troubles. And from that selfishness and self-centeredness comes 100 forms of fear and all my resentments, but all based in self. And you told me that I had to be rid of it or else it would kill me. And there seems no way of getting rid of it without God's help. And that is the purpose of our 12 steps. That is the purpose of our program. Some actions that I take and some principles I start to live by that allow me to find a power greater than myself that would solve my problem. Didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue. I thank God for strong sponsorship. I am the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes that without strong sponsorship, our chances of recovery are almost nil. Almost nil. You see, I suffer from a disease of perception. Tell me if I'm wrong. I know you'd be more than happy to do so. But I believe it says in our book at step 10 that by now sanity will have returned. That must infer that up until that point, I'm operating from an insane position. I need your guidance. I need you to help me see the truth, the facts about my life. And I thank God for that. I thank God for that direction. And you took me through that process. You took me through the amends process, a freeing thing for a guy like me who had been wrapped up in self his entire life. You know, I don't know about any of you, but I can tell you for my entire life, for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and still today, if I am in not fit spiritual condition, the first thing I do when I meet you is I size myself up to you. First thing I do. And I am always better than or less than. Never the same as. And when I do that, I separate myself from you and I separate myself from God. Didn't have a clue. And I had done that my entire life without ever knowing I was even doing it. And through that amends process and through getting right with the world, today I can be free and just be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. No better than and no less than. Just one of God's kids, just the same as you. That is a freeing process for somebody who'd spent 90% of every waking moment trying to act the way I thought you needed, to constantly seeking your approval. That is tiring stuff. You will need a double whiskey doing that all day, let me assure you. And something great as time has gone on. You know, I've listened to people, I don't know if you get this craziness here or not, but I hear some of these discussion meetings, people talk about whether, for 45 minutes, debating whether they were recovered or recovering. Jesus, perfect. Smoke starts coming right out my ears. Our book is very, very clear. Very clear. But I thank God where you showed me the book where it says it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And if we do, we're headed for trouble. Because we are not cured of alcoholism. Not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I want to share something with you. That sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the harder it is for me to be truthful with you. Sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the harder it is for me to come to you and tell you I'm dying inside right now and I don't know what to do. Because I've been sober a long time and I'm an active member of AA and I want you to think I have it all together. Sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the easier it is for me to become judgmental. I know you don't do that in Atlanta. I do. Look what they're doing over there. Look what's going on there. Huh? Sometimes the farther away I get from a drink, man, that insidiousness of alcoholism, I watch it day in and day out of people come here and get sober and for the very first time in their life find an answer. find a solution. Find a place where they feel like they belong. Start to live the good life. And so many of those same people, after a period of time, turn and walk away and go back to that hell they came from. Why, in dear God's name, would we ever do that? I believe we drink long before we drink. I believe the last thing to go is the meetings. It happens long before that. I hear people all the time, why'd you drink? Well, I stopped going to meetings. Happened long before you stopped going to the meetings. Easy to let up in a program of action. And sometimes we mistake activity for action. Action is activity with purpose. And I thank God. You see, I cannot stay spiritually fit because I used to be a GSR. I cannot stay spiritually fit because I used to make coffee at my home group. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to go to the detox. I stay spiritually fit today by the actions that I take today. Incredible thing. And let me tell you something. I am more in the center. I am more active in Alcoholics Anonymous than I've ever been in those 27 years. Because let me tell you something. I have a lot more to lose today than I did on September the 21st, 1989, let me tell you. I'm staying right here with you guys. I ain't going nowhere. And the great thing, he introduced me to a loving God. Loving, powerful God. Chuck Chamberlain used to say that we have one problem and only one problem. That's all we have, Robert. One problem. And from that one problem comes all other problems. But we only have one. And that one problem is a conscious separation from God. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a disbeliever. If you'd have said to me, do you believe in God? I would have said to you, yes, I do. It had as much meaning in my life as the price of coffee beans in Brazil tonight, but I wasn't a disbeliever. And God was way, way up there in heaven. And he had long hair and a beard and a big stick. And if you were good, good things happen. And if you're bad, bad things happen. Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your life? You were the first people that said to me, no, no kidding. Deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, that is only where he may be found. And the great reality for us is that our Creator has entered our hearts and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. You introduced me to that power through watching your actions and listening to your stories. That's why we tell our stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is what we talk of in our own language and from our own point of view, how we were able to form a relationship with the power greater than ourselves. That is the purpose of an AA talk. And that's you introduced me to that loving God that today is the great reality of my life. And it becomes powerful. And it becomes a way of life and a design for living now. And then you told me if I want to keep all this stuff, I got to give it away. The great paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. That nothing ensures us immunity from drinking. Like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. The occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect in my spiritual life through unselfish acts, I will surely drink when I hit those certain low spots. If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous and you've been fortunate enough to come here and stay and things are good in your life and you've been sober for a little while and everything's wonderful, buckle up. Buckle up. Life will happen. Life will happen. And when it does, I better have a power that is real to me. That is real to me. And I have that through the experience of those 12 steps. You see, there's a very big difference from believing to experiencing. Very big difference in believing and having a conscious contact with that power. I can take you to all kinds of places tonight and say to those people, you believe in a higher power. Oh, yes, I believe in a higher power. And many of those people will be drunk next week. We go from believing to experiencing, to contact through those 12 steps. Incredible process. That's our purpose here. To share, help another alcoholic. You and I are uniquely gifted to help other alcoholics. It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. No. I don't know if you do this here or not, but at home in Toronto, when you celebrate your 5-year, your 25-year birthday, you get your cake and stuff, and you get to pick the speaker that night and the players and stuff. Some family come, maybe some people from work come. Never been to AA before, don't know anything about AA. Some monkey like me gets up here and says things like, "Yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac. I picked it up at 9 o'clock in the morning and totaled it at 10. We laugh, laugh. Your speaker at your roundup talks about spilling a bottle of whiskey in his bed and then sucking it out of the sheets. Laugh, laugh. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking about us? Huh? Says we laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You know what it says after that? Of course you do. Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we've recovered. We've recovered and been given the power to help others. God's power, not my power. My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose to it whatsoever. I don't know what your life's been like. It's none of my business. But mine had none. My life, I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk. In trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. I work all week so I can drink all weekend. I deal so I can do. That's my life. And all the people in my life are the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning, no purpose. I go to a detox at home. I've been going there for 25 years now. Not because I'm some saint, some wonderful human being. I don't go and carry message to alcoholics because I'm a nice, wonderful man and I'm grateful. I hope I am a better man, and I am grateful, but I don't ever want to forget. I carry the message there because that's how I stay sober, not because I'm wonderful. Bill Wilson did not go see Dr. Bob because he was overly cared about Dr. Bob's drinking. Bill Wilson had to see Dr. Bob because if he didn't, he was going to drink. And that is the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I go to that detox. And we have a Sunday morning meeting. If I'm at home Sunday, I always like to go there. We have a big meeting, bigger than this, every Sunday morning. I like to take new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today, but I happen to think it's good. Anyway, I go there one day. There's a guy there, and he's in bad shape. I'm not talking detoxing, hungover. I'm talking, I thought, this guy might die, Robert. He might die. Well, I figure he could die at the meeting as easy as he can die there. Dying's dying. You got to do it somewhere. Let's go. We went to the meeting. After the meeting, we spent a couple hours together talking about this design for living that we have, this practical program action. I left him. I never saw him again. I'm sitting in the meeting one day. I see some guy coming across the room. I could see he's headed for me. Clean-cut looking guy, though, had a shirt, pair of slacks on, come walking up. He said, "Butch, you probably don't remember me." I said, "I'm sorry, I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people." He says, "My name's Ziggy." I said, "Holy smokes." That's not really what I said. That's what I'm saying here. He said, "You remember me?" I said, "Oh, I remember you, and it's the guy, and he's looking good." He said, "Butch, I just wanted to come and thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning." He said, "I haven't had a drink since that day. It's almost been a year." I said, "Congratulations." He said, "I was wondering if I can ask a favor of you." I said, "If I can do it, I will." He said, "Will you come and talk at my 1-year birthday?" I said, "I'd be honored to do that." I went and talked to the group a handful of years ago now, and I got up to the front of that room, crowd like this. I couldn't get going, John. I started crying. I couldn't get going. And I'll tell you why. I looked, and they're sitting at the front table in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was getting his 15-year medallion. Took him to his first meeting, talked at his 1-year, talked at his 5-year, talked at his 10-year, talked at his 15. You know where I was last year? Ziggy's 20. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose? My life is so full. My life is so rich. I got a wife at home that I love as much as life itself. I got friends all over your country, all over the world. God, I live a good life. Huh? I live a good life. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do it. Talking to you about the things that have happened in my life since I came to this thing and did the one thing we have to do. Don't you love, guys? Don't you love when we read How It Works? The greatest piece of literature ever written. Huh? For us, anyway. But don't you love at the end of the steps where it goes, "Oh, whoa, what an order, I can't go through with that." Huh? Don't you love what it says after that? Don't worry. Don't worry. None of us can. I can't, Robert can't, Bill couldn't, Bob couldn't. None of us can. As a matter of fact, none of us is able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. We practice, and some days we do better than others. But the one thing we do here 100%, that first step. We admit to our innermost selves, our innermost self, that I am an alcoholic and my life's unmanageable. See, again, I can go to any detox anywhere in the world, say, you powerless, powerless over alcohol, powerless over drugs. Yes, sir. They all know it here. I need to know it here. I need to know deep, deep down in my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and my life depends on being with you and taking these actions. I'll tell you what I think that first step and the key to recovery is surrender. Surrender. I'm done. I'm finished. No more tough guy. No more big shot. No more Mr. Know-it-all. I'm done. I don't want to live this way anymore. I want to live the way you're living. Will you please help me? Will you please help me? And I become willing to do whatever it is you tell me I have to do. I don't need to like it. I don't need to agree with it. I don't need to think it's good for me. I just need to do it. And when I do that, I'm starting to walk in the sunshine. I'm starting to walk in the sunshine. Do I have 5 minutes? I'm taking them anyway. Oh, I just share one last story with you, and we'll go for some ice cream or something. But, I want to just touch on something that we talk about. You have these topic meetings. Everybody got a topic? I'm a big fan of those. I shouldn't say that. But anyway, I think the thing we talk about more than anything else in Alcoholics Anonymous, we could take a survey and find out the topic we talk about more than anything else, it would be hands down what it is, isn't it? Be hands down. Let's discuss gratitude tonight. Let's discuss gratitude. My sponsor told me gratitude's an action, not a thought. Don't tell me how grateful you are. Show me. Show me you're grateful. And I want to tell you tonight that I'm extremely grateful just to be grateful. Because before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never grateful a single solitary day in my life. No matter what I had, it was never enough. If I had a car, I wanted a newer car. A house, a bigger house. A job, a different job. It didn't matter what I had in my life. I always wanted more or different. Didn't know the meaning. Didn't know the meaning. That sponsor that I've talked to you about tonight, I love that man with all my heart. My sponsor was an active member in AA. My sponsor's health deteriorated. He had emphysema. And he was on oxygen all the time. And he was going to go talk a couple hours from our home at a young gal's one-year birthday. And it was June. It was June 8th, and it was hot and humid. And he'd been in the hospital twice that month. He wasn't good. It was not good. And we were to go to that meeting, and I called him up in the afternoon. I said, Bob, it's hot and humid out. That meeting's one of those low halls, no air conditioning. I said, they would not want you to come. I'm going to call Cliff and Mary and tell them that we're not going to come. They wouldn't want you to. He said, that young lady's expecting us. We'll be there. I said, okay. So I go to pick him up. I got an SUV. I got his oxygen tanks, his wheelchairs. I got more stuff than the paramedics have. I load him in that truck. We drive the 2 hours. There was no wheelchair access. The boys put him right in the chair, carried him down the stairs. They got his oxygen stuff going. His hose is on. We plugged him into the wall. power. And he gave everything he had. He made a beautiful talk. He gave it all, but I'll tell you, at the end, he was spent. He was spent. And the guys got all the gear and stuff and all the stuff, and they took him back up in that wheelchair, and we got in the truck, and we're going to leave, and I was going to pull out of the parking lot, and he said to me, kid, I'm awfully glad you were with me tonight. I said, well, I'm glad I was with you too, Bobby. We were always together. We went everywhere together for 15 years. For the last 5 years, he didn't drive. I took him everywhere. And he said, no, kid, he said, I'm really glad you're with me tonight. He said, I think I just made my last talk. My sponsor talked at somewhere between 100 and 150 AA meetings a year for 45 years. I said, Bob, I said, you're just tired. You're going to feel better tomorrow. And we drove home. We drove that drive, and I got him up in the condo I was going to leave. He said, kid, you got a couple minutes? I said, I have all the time in the world. He said, I just want to take a look in my journal. He went in his room and he brought his, looked in his journal. He said, "It's okay, kid. Go home now." He says, "There's nothing in the journal. It's empty." That's the first time that journal had been empty in 45 years. The next day on June the 9th, I called. He was feeling a little bit better. And the next day on June the 10th, I called and I didn't get an answer. And I waited a little while and I called back and I didn't get an answer. And you know when you know? And you don't want to know. You just don't want to know. And I drove around for 2 hours because I didn't want to go see what I knew I was going to see. And I picked a young guy up. I sponsored. I said, "Come on, we're going to the old man's house." And I was crying. He said, "Butch, what's wrong?" I said, "The old man's gone." He said, "How do you know that?" I said, "Because it's June the 10th and the journal's empty." And we got there and they let us in. And there was that little man that I loved kneeling beside his bed. And he was face down and he was gone. And it was like somebody unzipped me and took out my heart. I felt an emptiness and a loneliness like I hadn't felt in a long time. And I was there a long time. The coroner comes and all those people come and it was late and they finished. They said, "It's okay, you go home now." And I drove out to the lake and I sat down at that lake and I had a long cry. Friends, that's not a sad story. I don't tell you that as a sad story. I had 15 years of one of the greatest members Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever known. Tom Ivester once said to me, "Butch, your sponsor is the finest man I've ever known." That's a high compliment for Tom Ivester. I'd had 15 years. We were as close as two human beings can possibly be. And he was gone. A part of my life had just changed forever and would never be the same. And I missed them. And anyway, I sat down there and then I went upstairs. And before I got in bed, I knelt down beside my bed and I thanked God for another day of sobriety. You see, my friends, Alcoholics Anonymous works in the good times, and Alcoholics Anonymous works in the hard times. In those darkest hours when you feel your heart is going to break in two and you can't make it another day. I'm talking about when life happens, not when you break a shoelace. When life happens, that's when the people in your home group will pick you up, and a power that you have found here will carry you home every single time. Every single time. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity and privilege of being here, for your kindness and listening to me tonight. I don't know what's going to happen from here on in. None of us know for sure, do we? You see, just because we get sober, become members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. Life still goes on. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many years now, first thing in the morning, including first thing this morning, I say to my friend upstairs, I say, "If you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous." Because my dear friends, I got to tell you, there's no place, Johnny, no place I'd rather be tonight than right here with you in Atlanta. Thank God. Thank you.